Call the meeting of the Energy Finance and Policy Division to order. Quorum is present, and first item on the agenda would be the approval of the minutes from February 8th. Chair would entertain a motion to...
So moved.
Representative Faulk moves approval of the minutes from February 8th. Are there any discussion, any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their approval, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Representative Bly, House File 1182. Hopefully the thrilling conclusion thereof.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. I also share that view.
Representative Bly, before you begin, I believe we have author's amendment, which currently is coded in the packets as H1182A6, and our research staff tells me that that actually should be recoded as H1182DE3.
That's correct.
So if members would make that notation, then Representative Bly, would you address your amendment? And before you do that, I think it would be in order to move the bill.
Okay. I would like to move passage of House File 1182, and I believe it's being referred to...
The motion, Representative Bly, would be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Civil Justice.
Thank you. I do have... I would like to move the delete all amendment, the DE3 amendment. I do have a verbal amendment to that amendment. Can I make that now, or should I wait till we pass the amendment? Is that right?
If it's in the nature of a correction,
could
just incorporate that if you want to tell us what it is.
Yes, it would be on line 1.18. A word was omitted. Transporting should be natural gas in between transporting and gas.
Senator Bly, that does not correspond to...
Oh, I see. Okay, I'm sorry. That doesn't correlate to what you've got?
Perhaps, Mr. Eloff, can you shed a little light on this?
I believe, Mr. Chair, Representative Bly was... referring to line 1.18 of the DE3 amendment?
That's correct.
After the word transporting, to insert the word natural. So that line 118 reads, line transporting natural gas to an end user.
Thank you. Representative Bly, if you want, you can just incorporate that into your amendment.
Yes, I would like that incorporated.
Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Bly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment you have, the delete all amendment you have before you, represents the... conversation I've had with the representative from the League of Minnesota Cities to take care of the issues that they and concerns they had about the previous language in the bill. And it essentially focuses in on the areas of concern that I was most concerned about, which are the high voltage power lines and petroleum and gas, natural gas pipelines. And so that's what this does moving forward. It also stipulates that the effective date is commenced with the as soon as the proceedings that have gone forward and we've had the bill passed and signed into law. I think that that's the extent of the changes, other than just kind of elucidating that those are, that's what the removal of the exemptions applies to.
Any discussion to the bill as amended? Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are we working off the DE3 amendment?
We are, Representative Gunther.
I didn't have a copy of that.
That was just adopted with the incorporation of an author's amendment on line 1.18, inserting natural, the word natural between transporting and gas. And that's actually the what was originally coded as the A6 amendment, which
okay.
should have been coded as the DE3. So you probably do have it there.
I got the A6. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Obermuller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to know if the author would, the 2.13 may need that insertion of natural there as well.
Yeah.
So I'll make the, I'll move that we add the word natural between transporting and gas on line 2.13. Thank you.
Good catch. Thank you, Representative Obermuller.
Where did they put natural in?
Representative Obermuller moves to amend the DE3 amendment by adding the word on line 2.13 after transporting the word natural. Any discussion to that amendment? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? That amendment is adopted. Discussion to the bill. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry I couldn't be here last week. I was a little under the weather when we had some earlier discussion, but to the author of the bill as amended. The DE3, I think we just adopted. Am I to understand then that this was a deal that was struck with the cities and counties that pretty much exempts then things like airports and watershed districts and pipelines, school districts, and so on and so forth. So this is only an imposition then on public utilities dealing electricity and natural gas. Is that what we have here?
Correct.
Representative Bly.
Mr. Chair, I got a couple other questions.
Representative Beard.
And I'm noticing there's a whole packet of amendments here that are in here. Are we going to be dealing with these also? Is that the intent, Mr. Representative?
Representative Beard, my understanding is that as far as we know, the only other amendment that was intended to be offered today was the Westrom Amendment, and I don't know if he means to do that.
Okay, I think
not,
that was...
Since he's not here.
Yes. Well, then, if you indulge me just for a moment to come up to speed here just on a couple things, Mr. Chair, to Representative Bly, the cost of then of... because obviously costs are going to go up when we do this. We're dealing with a mixed bag here, particularly on CapEx 2020 project, where there's only three IOUs in that bunch of 11 companies. There's co-ops and there's associations of municipalities, which are nonprofit organizations. First of all, the question is the costs of the increased cost of building the power lines in this case, will that go into the rate base? Does that increase the cost of the assets that they're allowed to recover their rate of return on, or how is that going to be dealt with?
Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair Hilty and Representative Beard. My bill doesn't deal with the, or my amendment doesn't deal with how those costs will be dealt with. And I think that, you know, as we've spoken before, my primary concern is to make sure that property owners have a fair path to, in this whole process. And so I guess I can't really comment on what the ultimate resolution of that would be.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Beard.
Related to that then comes to the nonprofits and the cooperatives who don't have stockholders as much as they have members, and how those costs get passed through and how they get to deal with it and so on and so forth. But any thoughts on that, or did they weigh in on this at all?
Representative Bly.
Chair Hilty and Representative Beard. Another question might be, should it be that the property owners should bear that cost?
That's a fair question.
And so I think my purpose in bringing this forward, representing my own constituents, was that we want a fair path to determine what where the cost should go. And that's what I'm intending to do.
Mr. Chair, I'm noticing from the list of testifiers last week, I don't see that MnDOT was on there, and I don't know that we have time to call them today. perhaps in the next committee, we could do that. Because one of the things we tried to do, members, here a couple years ago, and we had some trouble with this in Rochester with some quick takes and with contract real estate appraisers moving around, taking land for the Route 52 project, which was on short timelines. We had some real heartburn with the way people were treated there. And so we changed some rules, which had some impact, had impact on the obviously the cost of the project, the taxpayers picking up, but also had some impact on the people who were dealing with the quick take folks. And it would be probably be very helpful to hear from those to see if this actually accomplished that mission. I'm not sure that your DE2, seeing it here for the first time a few moments ago, whether that is exactly like what we did with MnDOT or not. But, Mr. Chairman, and members that are on the next committee, I'm just going to suggest that perhaps we give a heads-up to MnDOT and have their real estate department ready to tell us how that went. And I'm making that suggestion without exactly knowing what the, how they're going to testify or what the answer would be.
Well, Representative Beard, you just referred to DE2. I think we're working on the DE3, which is the...
DE3, I'm sorry. It's the A6.
A6.
Now renamed
now,
DE3.
Representative Beard, one of the reasons that we did lay the bill over in the last at the last hearing was precisely to give the opportunity for anyone who might be concerned with either the bill or any of the amendments an opportunity to testify. And we will do that today. I don't know if anyone from MnDOT is here. It was my understanding that Representative Westrum was going to consult with them in the interim. I don't know if he did that either. I haven't had an opportunity to speak with him.
Mr. Perry, I did run into our friendly neighborhood MnDOT public relations guy up there on the way down and decided it would probably be the better part of valor not to put him on the spot at this very moment after a brief chat with him. I don't think they're ready to testify today, but if he's listening back there, I'm just putting him, giving him a heads up that he may want to or chat with some people in the department that that could happen in the next
Well, Representative hearing. Beard, they have had a week to think about it. I don't know how long it's going to take them.
Good.
We won't refer to any other MnDOT projects in that regard. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember when CapEx 2020 was first brought up, there were a bunch of people from Martin County. Their concern was that when a power company would come pay for the area that they were going to go through, that 6.7 miles through a section of land, or 6.7 power poles through a section of land, that that they would, the original person got paid approximately the value of the land, depending on which power company you're negotiating with, and they were very happy because they got not only that money, they bought the land, but then they could farm between the poles. So it wasn't really a bad deal until they went to sell it, and then the second buyer would say, I didn't get anything, and I got to farm around these stupid power poles all the rest of my life with the big machinery we have. We get our plows caught up in this, that, and the other thing. So they thought there should be ongoing funding for those. Is that what you have in mind?
Representative Bly.
Chair Hilty and Representative Gunther. My bill does not provide for ongoing funding. It's primarily to put in place a what we consider a fair process for property owners when eminent domain is used to take land for the purpose of the high voltage power line and pipelines. You mentioned that, I think, at an earlier time, and although I think it has some merit, it might complicate what I'm trying to do too much to add that in.
Representative Gunther?
I think I probably would complicate things a lot. However, I think this is something that's going to come up eventually. And if we don't address it now or soon, we'll have another bill. And we talked about the same events. And I thought maybe this would be a good time to get them all taken care of.
Representative Bly.
Chair Hilty and Representative Gunther. I do share your concern about that. A concern I have is that one of the reasons that I brought this issue in the last session was that I was concerned about the property owners facing the power line coming through their land and the resolution of contracts and all of that. And I feel there's some urgency, if I'm going to have some remedy for the problems they face, to move things quickly. And my concern is, even adding in more complication means that it may get slowed down or have greater difficulty passing. So that's, I guess that's my concern, is that I want to make sure that I am able to get this through.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bly, with the size of these renewable power companies, especially the wind farms, we have one in my county, it's 150 megawatts. It certainly goes over your 100 megawatt thing here. If we don't do something, we won't be able to take that power to the marketplace, and renewable energy would be somewhat impossible to build. That we have as a goal of 25 by 25. And how do we justify that by doing what we're doing here?
Representative Bly.
Chair Hilty and Representative Gunther, I guess I'm not sure I understand your question. I don't think that what we're doing here prohibits the project from going forward, which would, you know, if that's the purpose, to bring renewable energy to market, I don't think we're stopping that. I think, again, the concern is making sure that property owners are dealt with fairly in this kind of process. I think that in 2006, rules were put in place to have this kind of taking of land be done in an orderly way that shows, puts things on an even playing field. And I really have yet to see a justification for why all entities shouldn't follow these rules. However, that's more than I'm able to bite off and chew right now. So I'm willing to negotiate and move through what property owners have brought to me as their big concern. And that's why I'm here with this particular bill in the shape that it's in.
Thank you very much. I commend you for doing that.
Further discussion. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment on Representative Bly's last offer. If you would like to lift the exemption on everybody, I would support that, just on the basis of fair play. And the other comment, just I hear Representative Gunther keeps talking about 25 by 25. I hear that all around the table. I got to remind you that for the majority of the wealth creators in this state, the number is actually 30 by 20. That's us. That's the people I represent, 30 by 20. So we're dealing with, you see why I'm a little exercised about the short timelines we're on here, Representative Bly. So just that observation, it's not 25 by 25 for most of us, it's 30 by 20, folks.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just like to add the comment, a lot of times when we think about a high voltage power line going through property, we often think about farming communities and we think about people having to drive tractors around poles. But I would just like to remind folks that that's not always the case. Sometimes these lines actually go through little bottleneck areas between lakes where there's really no other way to put one of these poles. And then it affects the property of people that own little, you know, maybe 5 acre or less lake lots, and quite a number of these people. So it's not just a matter of somebody driving around a power pole, but it actually can have a big effect on some of these very small landowners in areas that don't have any other opportunity. And I see both sides of this. You know, I know that we need to build out our power lines. There's no question about that. And at the same time, I have constituents in my district that are facing this exact same problem with expansion of power lines coming along. And I just think people need to keep in mind that something needs to be fair for those people, because I venture to say that almost anybody that, you know, when we're looking at expanding our capacity for transmission to areas within, say, our power co-ops, everybody wants that to happen, of course, unless it happens to be their property that it goes across. And when I visit with other constituents in my district and I pose it to them in that manner and I say, well, what if it was actually your place? Then they actually stop a little bit and think, well, you know, that might be a little bit different. But I just want to make sure that when people are considering this, they recognize the fact that it's not just a large expanse of an agricultural piece of property, but smaller pieces as well.
Representative Westrom, I believe you had an amendment of the A7. Do you wish to offer that amendment?
Mr. Chair, I do. First, why don't I move, what's the number on it? A, A7, I'll move the A7 amendment.
Very well. Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, I have some additional language that I hadn't got to, and I just brought in actually to represent, or Mr. Eloff right now, from MnDOT. They shared some concerns they've had with it. So the language you've got in front of you is a modified amendment, but not a complete modified amendment. So I would like, if nothing else, I'll let Mr. Eloff look this over, and if he thinks it's something we could add in as an oral and people are okay with that, Mr. Chair, we'll do that. If they're not comfortable, we could work that out in the next process, whichever you think. But MnDOT is here and can testify to it if we want to, just to give people a general idea of what we're talking about.
Certainly, we'll give them that opportunity, Representative Western. Would you like to have them come forward at this time?
They could, Mr. Chair. And meanwhile, I'll just briefly explain the intent of the amendment to the committee. If MnDOT, now that we're out in the back, I don't know if they've come in. They're here. Mr. Chair, members, the intent of this amendment on Representative Bly's bill, and Representative Bly, I appreciate your indulgence on potentially adding this to your language, but with the new transmission lines that we've had coming through our proposed through our districts, certainly it's resurrected some feelings that many of us were too young to get involved in, or it's long enough back that we've tried to put them in our recent memories, our distant memories. This would just say when there's public corridors nearby or where routes want or should be, the PUC should take that as a priority consideration for where they place transmission lines. Specifically, I know there's four proposals on the table. One in my area that is coming from Moorhead to Monticello. One route is near the corridor of I-94 that already exists. Another is to go 20 miles south of that through farm fields that are still intact, and that has a lot of people concerned. But I know I've talked to other members with other transmission lines that have similar concerns. And so, Mr. Chair, that's kind of the basis and the background of what my amendment is trying to do. I've worked with the railroads to address some of their concerns and MnDOT, and would continue to do that if there's more that come up, so long as we can still live with the spirit and the priority that we want to put on this. MnDOT could come forward, Mr. Chair, if they could just.
So while we're waiting for that to occur, Representative Western, let me ask, I mean, the amendment says the commission must cite the line within or adjacent to existing highway or other publicly owned rights of way, if available. Must, to me, seems to remove any latitude that they might have. And there's some question about what the meaning of if available would actually mean. If that simply means does it exist, or are there, as opposed to some other conditions of availability, you know, I think that is something to be clarified. But my real question, I guess, is, you know, in the statute as it exists, one of the criteria that is specifically outlined, and that is in the bill on the same page as your amendment, that the PUC should, among other things, consider or evaluate potential routes that would use parallel existing railroad or highway rights of way. I think the difference between what's already in statute and what you're proposing is that you're just requiring them to do that if possible. You know, one of the questions that was raised in the last committee hearing on this issue was, does that mean, for instance, that if there's a highway right-of-way right through the middle of Finlayson, say, and there's also, you know, just a couple hundred yards off of Main Street in a small town like that, pretty much nothing, would we be requiring the siting of a power line right down Main Street rather than what would be, in many cases, a kind of obvious preferable alternative?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess you raise a good question. We're saying they shall give priority consideration in this language, the DOT, but we might be confusing members by talking about that when they don't have that in front of them, and I'm not, my intent would be that there's a little latitude left of to the PUC to take in those aspects, but to give pretty clear guidance that they should start looking at this and then pinpoint the problem areas, and then that would be part of the final route considerations, as far as there might be some areas they jog around, especially intersections that MnDOT or other highway authorities know are going to be expanding in a booming area, or I mean, there's, in your point, there might be situations where it doesn't pay to go down Main Street and going around the outskirts or another area is a better way, but that, I guess, my intent would be to have a little latitude like that left in the language, and if we're not there yet, I'm willing to try to keep working on that.
thank you, Representative Westerman. We do have a representative from DOT at the table, sir, if you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us what you think of this proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dave Sikora, and I work in the Office of the Chief Counsel at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And we at MnDOT have been working with the proponents of the CapEx 2020 high voltage transmission line applications very actively for the past year, and in particular the last 6 months or so, as well as working with the Office of Energy Security and other persons who are affected by these transmission lines that are proposed. And as part of that, we have been trying to find locations where we can accommodate transmission lines in or near the highways as close as possible, so that we use those corridors when it's prudent to do that. But in each circumstance, we have found that it's necessary to take a look at the specifics of the highway to make sure that there is a safe place for the traveling public to proceed along the highways, as well as a safe place for the workers who are building and maintaining those highways to conduct the activities that they have. If they're operating large equipment, we need to make sure that any high voltage lines are located in such a place that they're not going to get an electric shock or get injured by the proximity to these high voltage lines. But consistent with maintaining a safe travel and work environment, we are seeking to bring them in as close as we can to highways where it's prudent to do that. There are some other considerations that we feel need to be taken into account, things such as what you mentioned, Mr. Chair, circumstances where a highway may go through a community, or there are some cases where it might be designated as a scenic highway, special situations that need to be taken into account. We look at places where we are planning to do some expansion to a highway, or it might be adding a new interchange to an interstate, situation such as that that we need to identify. And it's not in anybody's best interest to put a line in a location where it may need to be relocated at some point in the not too distant future. that can be expensive to whomever needs to pay for relocating, whether it's the utility or the state trunk highway fund. So we have had some discussions with Representative Westrum about trying to find some language that takes those safety and highway efficiency types of considerations into account, but consistent with maintaining those considerations, giving some priority emphasis to placing these kinds of facilities as close or in the highway right-of-way as is practical. And we'd like an opportunity to continue to have a discussion with Representative Westrum to find some language that accommodates both needs.
Representative Westrum, we are having the language that was passed over to me copied. Do you want to have that considered at this time?
You're talking the DOT language, the second language, which I it came from discussions with the DOT folks. So, yeah, that'd be fine. So, then, Mr. Chair, if people would have language in front of them, and we can, because it is some different than the A7 amendment. It's
yes.
Got similar intent, but it's a little lengthier.
It'll just be a minute or two to get those copies and have them distributed. In the meantime, I think we could go ahead and discuss,
Mr. Chair, just
the intent of the amendment.
I hate to put Mr. Ulloff on the spot, but maybe would it be helpful just if he would read to the committee what the language is so they get an idea of it, what it says while they're waiting? Or if you're the chair, I just might be helpful, I thought.
Mr. Ulloff, you want to give it a shot?
Sure. The amendment states, in issuing a route permit for a high-voltage transmission line, the commission shall, consistent with the safe and efficient operation of transportation systems, give priority consideration to utilizing existing utility and highway corridors and public railway rights of way. The term corridor means land in or in reasonable proximity to an existing utility, railway, or highway easement or right of way. The commission shall also give consideration to placing high voltage transmission lines underground to the maximum extent feasible.
Mr. Chair, just to give everybody this background and insight, I had folks from the railroads come in and visit with me last week, and the word public railway is what we've got in there, not to be confused or not to say that any private easements that railroads own would have to be part of this consideration. So I just want to make that clarification for any of those in the audience and the committee for their thought on this.
Representative Kaler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Westrum and Mr. Segura, I want to thank you for working on this amendment. Representative Westrum, I appreciate the time you put in as well. I think that I'm a visual person, so I'll have to see it in front of us. But the concern that I've had are twofold. One is this concern you expressed, Mr. Chair, about forcing the commission to not have any option but to just follow existing rights of way, which a corridor for a highway can be very different than a corridor for a 160-foot tower with a 345 kV line on it. Very, very different situations. The second is from my experience working on a proposed new corridor, 230 kV corridor through Chisago County as a bulk transfer corridor, that was then rerouted ultimately in partnership with Xcel, seeing the wisdom of the community's input, and MnDOT actually being increasingly flexible, allowing an existing 69 kV route through downtown Lindstrom to be upgraded to a 115 kV line and actually going from 13 poles downtown to 7, and moving a lot of the noise, the cable and telephone underground. I wouldn't have chosen the galvanized steel columns in the middle of downtown, but the council in their wisdom chose that approach. But I think that this notion of no new corridors unless absolutely necessary it seems to be embodied by the language that Representative Westerman and MnDOT are bringing forward. So I hope that Representative Bly will be open to accepting this language, because I think it's an important step forward to reduce the number of times that the other parts of the bill, that strife with landowners, can arise. This sort of first do no harm approach is, I think, embodied in the language, reserving the right to read it in front of us in a second.
Representative Bly.
I do have a testifier who would like to address some concerns about this amendment, if I could have her come up and do that.
Ms. McAbee, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paula McAbee, and I'm a lawyer in St. Paul, and I represent a number of citizens who are located at various parts of the CapEx 2020 power line. First, I think that what Representative Westrom is trying to address here is very legitimate. On the Fargo project, of the CapEx projects, something very unusual happened. Among the routes submitted by the applicants, from Freeport through to St. Cloud, there wasn't even a suggestion that the high-voltage line could go on the highway. So if you look at the maps, they provided many, many maps of the details. There's a great big hole where 94 is, and it's not even possible to compare whether taking that power line near the highway corridor would reduce impacts as compared to going up north through farms and wetlands or going down south. So I think this is a very legitimate problem because the applicant didn't even submit for us to look at an alternative on the highway, which is the most logical alternative. And arguably the reason they didn't do that is because on that route there'd be maybe a mile and a half at the most that would have to go underground. So I think there is a legitimate problem here, and that's that the applicant should be required to submit, and perhaps even the Public Utilities Commission should be required to consider a route that's on an existing right-of-way. I would, however, say that they should not be required to actually select that route. And that's because, in addition to representing folks on the Fargo line, I represent folks on the Brookings line. And on the Brookings line, the CapEx utilities did the opposite. They picked a right-of-way, which does go through right through the center of the most dense part of Hampton, the Hampton area. It affects more than twice as many homes as a route a mile to the north. It runs in front of a Buddhist temple that is the second most prominent in the United States. Think of it, if they were putting a 345 power line right on the front lawn of St. Paul's Cathedral, and you get a sense of how incompatible those land uses are. So the challenge I have is, though I think that what Representative Westrum is trying to do is very legitimate, there needs to be sort of a weighing of either that these routes must be considered but not necessarily must be chosen, or we need to look at language that creates a priority so long as the line that's on an existing right-of-way does not create greater impacts in terms of proximity to homes, cultural land uses, or environmental impacts. Because if this process is working correctly, the applicant will put in to the mix the existing right-of-way, and then the things will be balanced out. Where are there more wetlands? Where are there more people? Where are there more special land uses? Where is there more risk to the way people want to live their lives? And the correct route will be chosen. Something like the Fargo line, where the highway right-of-way never makes into the mix, is a huge error and should not happen again. But something like the Brookings line, where after analysis it looks like the highway right-of-way, which in that case is a two-lane road without shoulders and it's about 20 feet across, should not be chosen. It is less than 75 feet away from two homes. It more than doubles the number of people who are within 150 feet of that power line, and arguably at unsafe levels of exposure to it. So I think we need to keep working on this and look at either one of two possibilities. Either must consider, or if it's actually looking at issuing the permit, making sure that the other factors are also weighed against it, which are proximity to homes, cultural and other unique land uses, and features the natural environment that could be impaired by that power line. Be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Ms. McAbee? Representative Westrom?
No, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just I'm hopeful to find that balance, and I just do members have the new language? Maybe that's
we do have it before us.
I don't know
at this point,
that,
Representative Westrom.
Maybe I'll just listen. Maybe that helps people or doesn't help. I don't know. Let me just listen. Mr. Chair,
Representative Westrom.
I guess officially, I'm wondering if I need to substitute the A7 with that language, or amend the A7 to delete and incorporate that in, or what? Mr. Eliff, maybe you can give me guidance here.
Among other things that need to happen, Representative Westrom, is that the A7 amendment as offered refers to the DE2 amendment, but it actually what we have adopted is the DE3 amendment. So that would need to be incorporated into the A7. I think what you, well, I don't know. Let's ask Mr. Ela for a more definitive resolution than I'm capable of giving at this moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm afraid I can't give you a more definitive resolution. If you want to substitute the language that you all just got handed out for lines 2.21 to 2.23, we can just do that.
And then fix the DE3?
That's, yeah. And as you pointed out, Mr. Chair, change the DE2 in line 1.1 to DE3.
Yeah, obviously you can incorporate the change from DE2 to DE3, Representative Westrom, and I believe that you could as well simply substitute the language that has been distributed as paragraph E for the existing paragraph E in the A7 amendment.
Mr. Chair, that's what I would propose to do and incorporate the DE3 change.
Very well, then that would be the amendment that we have before us. Is there further discussion to the amendment?
Chairman.
Representative Beard.
Thank you. I'm just listening to the testifier who just testified here, and the well-intentioned amendment that Representative Westrom is doing, and the good work Representative Bly is trying to do, and I got to say I appreciate it, but just an observation here on the process. You know, when we did the CapEx 2020 bill here a few years ago, I think one of the things that the committee that handled it at that time was trying to do was to accommodate a public policy that we wanted to spread generation all over the place and move it out of town. But we had to get it here, and we recognized there were some engineering constraints to doing that. I think we also had the good sense to recognize that we were not going to make a lot of people happy by doing this. So we set up a process where they had to prove to the PUC the need, then they had to come back with some proposed sites, and I think if you look in the CapEx 2020 legislation, there was strong encouragement, because remember, we took away the Environmental Quality Board siting authority and gave it back to PUC, I believe, that we encouraged them to hold series of public hearings and get a lot of public input so we could talk some things through. Now, the testifier just talked about how, you know, she just made the point that we're never going to make anybody happy, because in one place we're putting it down highway rights of way, another place we're not, and people are yelling all over the place. Well, the good news is the attorneys make a lot of money, so they should at least send every member of this committee a thank you card when we're done. But I want to caution us here of thinking that overthinking this and overreaching as a legislative body, that we're going to fix every little problem, we're going to make a lot of people happy by what we're doing here. Because this amendment is and Tori, I love you, brother, but this amendment is, again, trying to legislatively circumscribed very minute fixes, very precise fixes that I think are best left in the regulatory arena. Now, we've got MnDOT already coming out, working with CapEx 2020 folks, only after CapEx 2020 finally got through the siting and saying, here's where we think we'd like to put it. So it would be premature for MnDOT to do anything before this day. And now that this day is here, they are actually, surprise, surprise, cooperating and trying to do good work over there. I would just caution us before we start adopting this kind of stuff to remember that we're trying to legislate, for crying out loud, now underground. And whether it goes on railways and what kind of railways and highways, and we're talking about centers of town, all the things that we actually pay some really good people who have lots of experience at doing this to already do. So we're going to take statute books now and build a wall behind these folks or maybe around them. And I'm afraid we're going to be, with the best of intentions, tying some people's hands and borrowing trouble we don't need to borrow. And you know what's going to happen at the end of the day? There's going to be a whole lot of unhappy people anyhow. So I just some thoughts to ruminate on as we think about what we're doing here. Happiness is not our strong suit.
Representative Beard, actually, I agree with pretty much everything you said. Representative Gill.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I don't like being a contrarian too often, but you know, in reading through 216E.03 subdivision 7, which is the heart of the A7 amendment, I've read it five or six times and can't find anywhere what I think is a fairly conservative notion that in routing new transmission lines, there should be an effort to use existing transmission corridors. I would invite other wisdom if I have missed something, but I don't believe that language is there. I believe that I do have the same concerns that you raised, Representative Beard, about policymakers encroaching on regulatory action. I don't think the Western Amendment gets there. And I think it creates some common sense presumptions of using existing corridors and utility corridors are what I am most interested in. I understand Representative Western's railroad and highway right-of-way. I think that as a policy statement, which is what I believe the Western Amendment creates, that there's a presumption that the Commission needs to first look at those options. There are bills that we'll see from me, or a bill at least, later that I think where you'll see that I am trying to balance what our role is and what the Commission's role is. It's a tough one to determine, but I think that this conservative notion that's embodied in the Western Amendment does make sense.
Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, I welcome other committee members' feedback. To Representative Beard, I guess, and maybe to the committee, let me give you a little more history, not to jeopardize or prolong this, but last summer when I was attending some of these meetings and the CapEx 2020 representatives and citizens that were calling me and showing up at these meetings were at least getting the feedback from our Department of Transportation, and I'm going to finish this whole story quickly, but that basically they're not getting much assurance that they can follow a public corridor, and at that time it appeared MnDOT was as big of an opponent as, or a problem, I shouldn't say an opponent, but it was causing the need or the fear that this alternative route number two was going to be coming right through the middle of Wilkin County, Grant County, Pope County, and all the counties down to Monticello to feed you and your good constituents new power, and right through 80 and 160 and 320 parcels of farmland that had not been subject to this kind of a cut-up. When you had what seemed like a natural corridor running along I-94, through Representative Marquardt's district, Lanning's district, my district, Representative Nornis's district, Paul Endert, Representative Anderson's district, Hosh's district, on down. And so that's where this initiated from. I understand your concerns, and MnDOT, I've had meetings with them, and I do not get the same impression from them that at least I was hearing from citizens and different representatives of the transmission line last summer, but hence the concern was, why wouldn't we be looking at the I-94 corridor first rather than farm fields that haven't been cut up and sending it that way? And so that's the background. And I got talking, and then there's other representatives here that have other lines being proposed that have similar concerns, and so that's kind of the impetus. But maybe that background gives you a little more understanding or thought into what I'm trying to achieve here, but that's what we're trying to achieve. And Mr. Chair, I dare say this isn't the perfect language, and I'm on civil law, where I understand this goes next time. Representative Bly, if there's suggestions he has, or you, Mr. Chair, or Representative Kalin, or Representative Beard, or the departments, as we look this over, I'm willing to entertain that. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if, from your last comment, am I getting the indication you might prefer not to even have this amendment go on? And if that's the case, let me know. I'd be happy to make changes now if we needed.
Well, Representative Westrom, I have tried as much as possible, and certainly mean to, in the future, adhere to the policy of not sending a bill out of this committee that has a that deals with a concern that is a subject for this committee without having it fixed. In this case, however, I do feel that while your substitute language for the amendment is certainly a step in the right direction, I think that this is a sufficiently complex issue that maybe it would be better to devote a little more attention to this. And as you point out, you are a member of the next committee to which this is referred if it passes out of this committee. And I think in this case it might be more appropriate to take this up, having given it a little more consideration. I think that the points that Ms. McAbee makes are ones that should be well taken. And if you want to take a vote on it, we can do that. But personally, I would feel better if it got a little more attention.
Mr. Chair, one thought that's striking me is maybe I would just ask Mr. Eliff to throw this into a bill. I'll get it introduced if we could maybe work on it that way. If Representative Bly is open to that, maybe there's a later point where we could team the two up in the process, knowing that this probably isn't sexy enough to get through the process on its own, but or else. I don't know. Other members, silence is hard to read, Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom, I was one of the things that I was going to suggest is that we do have a request from Ms. Bethel, representing the CapEx 2020 project, to testify on the bill in general, and I think maybe this would be a good time to do that and see if she could shed some light on this particular issue as well. So if members have no objection, Representative Portman, I know that we had you on the list, but is this something you want to address now, or can we wait until we hear the testimony?
Well, it's to the Westrom Amendment. That's why there was no chair here. This is broken. Would you rather I wait until the witnesses testified?
Representative Hortman, why don't you go ahead with your question while we're waiting for Ms. Patel to come forward?
Well, I understand Representative Westrom is trying to get some feedback about his amendment, and I think it's a thoughtful approach. It seems that the language is very flexible. It says they shall give priority consideration. It doesn't say they must. I hate to disagree with the chair, and he probably knows things that I don't, but I think the language is very flexible, and it reflects sort of the practical, common-sense view that most of our constituents would have. And I think it's flexible enough to take into account the concerns that Ms. McAbee raised, because it doesn't require that they put it in a place that has a lot of population. So I just wanted to give Representative Westrom a little bit of feedback, since it's hard to read how his amendment is being received.
Thank you, Representative Fortman. Ms. Patel, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Priti Patel, and I am co-executive director of CAPEX 2020, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to you today. As you know, our organization is a joint initiative of 11 utilities that provide electric service to a majority of the customers in Minnesota and the surrounding region. The CAPEX utilities are comprised of investor-owned, electric cooperatives, and municipals. The single purpose of this organization is to jointly plan, develop, permit, and build the necessary transmission lines that are required to maintain a reliable transmission grid now and into the future to accommodate the very significant wind and alternative energy that's being developed across the state, and to provide our customers with affordable service. By working together to plan and build this new transmission in the state, we are avoiding each utility building a separate set of high-voltage transmission lines, which means less cost for our ratepayers, and it means significantly less right-of-way required for these new lines. For the past several years, CAPEX 2020 has been working hard to achieve these goals, and the public purpose of our projects is established and determined through various regulatory processes that include significant stakeholder involvement. And after years of very public and lengthy regulatory hearings and review, including a certificate of need hearing, multiple significant need hearings, and routing hearings, some of our leading projects are now getting closer to final route approvals. And our need to begin acquisition of right-of-way in order to build these lines will be right around the corner. Representative Bly's bill, House File 1182, is before you today due to some concerns of landowners that are in his district. And the solution to those concerns contained in the bill is to repeal the Public Service Corporation exemption that's contained in current law. And as this committee has previously heard, significant new provisions were added to the eminent domain law in 2006 to correct the perceived condemnation abuses of local units of government. The problem the legislature was seeking to fix in 2006 was the use of eminent domain to condemn one private business, a car dealership, and to replace it with another business, the Best Buy headquarters. The public service exemption at the time was a non-controversial provision in the bill. It was non-controversial because it acknowledged that the eminent domain that was being used by the city for redevelopment purposes was very different from the utility's need for right-of-way easements to build power lines for the general benefit of Minnesota citizens. The proposed bill's simple solution is to remove this exemption in order to prevent situations where businesses or landowners are completely displaced or relocated. And the solution suggests that the 2006 amendments that address the Best Buy situation are also the correct fix for public utilities seeking to maintain a reliable electric transmission grid. And while this appears to be a simple solution in one set of circumstances, it does create problems in other situations. And CAPEX 2020 believes that the eminent domain issues and the solutions that are created by the need to construct new electric transmission facilities are different, and they deserve a different solution than the Best Buy fix. There are a few principal differences that are not addressed in this bill. First and foremost, utilities have an obligation to provide safe and reliable electric service to their customers. This is not an option for utilities. This is a mandate. We provide an essential service to the public. Second, while a city that's wishing to build a new office or commercial building may completely dislocate a dozen or so owners from their land, this is not the case generally for utilities. Utilities that build a transmission line typically do not displace homes or businesses. That is very rare. Utilities are usually acquiring only an easement to cross the land. This easement is long and narrow and may touch upon hundreds of pieces of property. But whatever your views are of the pros and cons of eminent domain, we think it is clear that the use of eminent domain by utilities is fundamentally different from other uses of eminent domain. Now, having said all of this, we do understand the desire to remove the total exemption of public service companies from the provisions that are addressed in the bill. And our government affairs staff have proposed various ideas for changes to some of these sections to more realistically accommodate utility construction. And at this point, we do not believe we've hit upon the right solution. But we look forward to and we will continue to discuss our concerns and hope to address some more proposed solutions as this legislation proceeds down the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Patel. Are there questions for this witness, Representative Beard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This gets to the reliability question I was going to talk about a little bit ago. But Ms. Patel, one of the things you're required to do is maintain reliability to the grid, which in this case, I think some of these lines, one in particular has to do with capacity constraints. That's the one coming from Brookings to Hampton. The rest of them, though, do they have to do with expanding the grid, the balance in the grid, and the reliability of the grid? And I'm going to a question on redundancy here, if you can comment on that.
And what is your specific question?
Specifically, we've talked about using existing utility corridors here. However, one of the engineering standards that you're required by law to live up to is the ability to withstand multiple failures in a corridor. Maybe it's MISO's regulation. So if a tornado moves through northwestern Minnesota, for instance, Joe, could you lean over just a little? Thank you. But tornado, for instance, tears through an area. We can't have the same power lines that are moving the same power from the same source to the same destination within how far apart do they have to be? How close can they be?
Ms. Patel.
Maybe you're not the one to ask that question to, but I wanted to make the point to the committee that when we're talking about siting power lines in existing corridors, sometimes this is a constraint that you actually have to consider when you're doing your siting process.
Ms. Patel.
You follow me now?
Chair, members of the committee, yes, I am following you, and
okay.
You are correct.
Thank you. Okay.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question I have, Ms. Patel. Could you answer, in your opinion, that you feel that every landowner that will be affected will be treated absolutely, unequivocally fairly?
Chair, members of the committee, my understanding of the general practices of many of our CapEx utilities is that we have been acquiring easements for decades, and it is done in a manner that has been acceptable to the public, and generally we have worked out our differences with landowners when we have had to acquire easements and other land rights. What you hear about are rare occasions, and while they do exist, the majority of our experience has shown us that we have worked out any easement acquisition issues with our landowners.
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm hearing this correctly, realistically, if this language or this, what Representative Bly is proposing, and people are being treated fairly, it's surely going to have very little effect because they are being paid to a point where they're not going to have to go and hire attorneys or to have these additional assessments. I mean, essentially, this should have very little impact on the process as a whole, and if people are being treated fairly, is that correct?
Ms. Patel.
Chair, members of the committee, I think you're, with all due respect, I think you are mixing a few things. We do have a few basic concerns with the language that is being proposed, the attorney's fees provision and the appraisal provision. The concern becomes that when you have, we're obligated to provide safe and reliable service to our customers. If we obtain an appraisal by an independent third-party appraiser that's state-certified who tells us the value of a parcel, we make an offer based on that parcel according to the proposed bill. Later, a court or a final determiner tells us that the appraisal was 22% off or 42% off, and now we're subject to attorney's fees. we ask ourselves, what did we do wrong here? We went to an appraiser, independent third-party appraiser, state certified, we got an appraisal. If later a third party determines that that was somehow wrong, what have we done that's wrong? And there is an inherent and reasonableness to the attorney's fees position or provision that we are seeing. When it comes to the appraisal fees, you know, we're not opposed to a reasonable appraisal structure that doesn't unnecessarily or unreasonably increase costs or increase delays on projects that many of the utilities are engaged in. We think that the appraisal provision that's being proposed appears to be meant for smaller projects, not projects like ours where we have so many easements and so many landowners that are affected. We are, unlike the other condemning authorities, we are opened up to what we see as an unreasonable amount of risk and cost that at this point is difficult to quantify but exists.
Further questions for Ms. Patel? Representative Bly.
I'm wondering if I have a testifier who might have some expertise in this area, too. I'm wondering if I could have him just address some of the comments that were made. Would that be possible?
It certainly would. I intend to ask for anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on the bill or the amendment to come forward, and this would be an appropriate time, I believe, for you to bring your witness forward.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Ms. Patel.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, my name is John Schmick. I was here at the last hearing. I'm a commercial real estate appraiser, have been for 20 plus years. I have some experience in this area. I'd like to address a couple of the things that were just brought up here. Nobody's disputing the need for reliable electric service, an electric grid. Nobody is disputing that these projects need to be built, and nobody is saying we're going to stop these projects. By all means, go forward with your project. What we are saying is stop subsidizing them through these exemptions. Now, we heard about delay. There is no delay. These entities that have eminent domain have the power to do quick takes, which means they go to court, they file their papers, the court gives them title. I had a case where they took the title, they built the project, the case didn't get settled for 6 years. Nobody stopped that project. Nobody's going to stop these projects. There are no delays. They have that power to go forward with their project. Cost. We said the last time we were here, yes, there's going to be some increased costs. But let's get realistic about these costs. If you need to get 100 appraisals, you go to an appraisal company, you get some economies of scales, you're able to get those 100 appraisals for a lot cheaper than a property owner can. This bill, even as it's amended here, still doesn't require these public service corporations to pay the same price that a city or municipality would if they were doing a street. You know, there's a lot of input into the certificate of needs, a lot of input into the routing permits. None of that is relevant. What we are talking about with this bill is when you come and take my property. And as a property owner, I guess I can't see the difference between the city taking my land for a road project and having to comply with these rules, and a city through a shell company. If this was a private corporation, we would call this a shell company, a public service corporation, taking my land for a sewer line. They're still taking my land. But in one case, they have to follow the rules, and in one case, they're exempt. As a property owner, how do I find that fair? How do you go to your constituents and say, well, we're going to have one set of rules for this project and one set of rules for this project, and if it's big, we're going to do this, and if it's small, we're going to do this. It makes no sense. You entrust these entities with an enormous amount of power when you give them the power of eminent domain. And with that power comes responsibility. Now, what hasn't been said in some of these hearings is there's going to be some extra costs, but let's think about that. The burden of proof in every one of these cases rests with the property owner. If he can't prove he's right, he's not going to get paid anyways, which means the Public Service Corporation has to lose the case. And not by a little bit, they have to lose by a lot, 20% minimum. Now, to me, some of these amendments talk about good faith offers and good faith appraisals, and we heard about they go out and they hire an appraiser and they got an offer. Well, that's great, but you know, every industry has good people and good bad people. Attorneys, you got good attorneys, you got mediocre attorneys, you got bad attorneys. The appraisal industry is the same way. You got good appraisers, you got bad appraisers, you got mediocre appraisers. Just because you have an appraisal doesn't mean the person was qualified to do it. And I've seen this for years. They go out and they find the lowest cost appraiser. And I'll tell you what, one of the worst examples is you go across the border into Wisconsin and they select their appraisals based on the lowest bid, which means that if you have a gas station and they want to take it and a farm appraisal comes in and says, I'll do that job for $500, that's who they'll hire. No experience, but they'll get an appraisal. So at least I applaud the acknowledgement that they actually got an appraisal. What we have right now, they're not required to do that. And what we saw in the MinCAN project was there weren't any appraisals, not until the day they showed up in court. And at that point, we started seeing appraisals that were less than all the verbal offers that they had been given. And there were threats. You go to court, we're going to come in with appraisal less than what we've offered you, and that's exactly what happened. And some of those appraisals were horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Couldn't prove the point that they said they were trying to prove, couldn't prove the valuations, contradictions in them. If you hire quality people, you're going to get good opinions of value. And the closer you get to good quality, the closer those numbers are going to be. And then there's an incentive to negotiate. If you take the risk out of this process, there's no incentive to negotiate. They always have the power to take you into court. You've got your attorney fees. And remember that the property owner has to carry the burden here. It's just a tremendous economic club that these entities wield. And there's no reason to have multiple rules for multiple projects for multiple entities. You take my property. I don't care what you're taking it for. You're taking my property. Follow one set of rules.
Mr. Schmidt, we're running very short on time, and I think you're getting into a lot of things that we already heard in your testimony previously. Right. So if there's anything compelling that you would like to close with, we would appreciate your doing that.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, I'd like to comment on some of these amendments here. Representative Western.
Mr. Schmidt, there aren't any amendments before us except the Western Amendment. None of the others that were in the packet have been offered.
Okay. I guess in that case, I would close with simply saying that the changes that have been written into 1182, I disagree with, only because you're going to create a situation where we're going to be back here in 2 or 3 years dealing with the exemptions for municipalities. And I think you're just prolonging the abuses that we have now. There's no reason to give anybody any exemptions. Thank you.
Questions for this witness? Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify briefly on this issue before we I mean to take a vote on this before we adjourn today? And Representative Westrum, if you want to have a vote on your amendment, I'm certainly willing to work with you as the bill goes forward. If it does need any tweaking, I've read the language two or three times, I think probably it comes pretty close to what we want, if not exactly. So,
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd be probably interested, unless Representative Kalin thinks differently since we talked. Mr. Chair, I certainly would like your support and would commit to work on this. I understand it would be best if we all, if the language was exactly the way we wanted it going out of here, but I, knowing the constraint of time, I'm pledging to you to address any concerns if we have them as they come up, and I plan to continue to work on this.
Thank you, Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. Very brief, and this is a nuance, but one that's important to us. In the MnDOT amendment to the Westrom amendment, there's reference to public railways, or public railway, or public railway rights of way. I believe when we talked to Representative Westrom and when I talked with the MnDOT folks, we were talking about publicly owned railway rights of way. There's a distinction, mm-hmm. which kind of publicly owned railway rights of way include a rail bank program, the Minnesota Rail Bank program, which I think you'd want to consider in this. And we're not quite sure what a public railroad is at this particular point anyway. So the language would be, I'm sure council can find it and reference you to it, but it'd be public, not public railway, but publicly owned railway.
Mr. Appitz, do you have, so it's not clear to me if you're offering
Mr.
Clarification here at this time for this amendment?
That's what I'm trying to do, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Appitz, am I reading, if we got rid of public railway and just put publicly owned right away, is that the clarification? Publicly owned railroad, I mean? Right away? That's what you're...
Instead of public railway, it should be publicly owned railway, as opposed to public railway.
Okay. I would agree with that. I appreciate the clarification. I know we talked about that.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that in my amendment if I could.
You can. We still have your amendment before us. Is there further discussion to the Westrom amendment as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor of the adoption of the Westrom amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted to the bill as amended. Representative Bly, any final remarks? Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bly renews his motion that House File 1182, as amended, be passed and referred to the Committee on Civil Justice. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
Nay.
Motion prevails. Bill is passed to civil justice. Representative Bly, thank you for all your work on this issue.
Thank you.
Do you eat lunch?
Sorry, Bob.
Oh, meeting is adjourned.